It is August 2014, and it is a very difficult day for Kevin Sugihara. Kevin has a billion-dollar decision to make. If he's wrong, not only will his stockholders be unhappy, but some of his employees will have nervous breakdowns or maybe even lose their jobs. See, Kevin Sugihara is the head of Warner Brothers. That's the venerable movie studio, the studio that owns DC Comics and releases all the DC Comics movies. Even if you don't read comic books, you gotta know the characters. Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman. You probably had a lunchbox or bed sheets with them on it, right? But it is these superheroes that are on Sugihara's mind today because his studio has a very big problem, a problem that even Superman couldn't leap with a single bound. A few months earlier, Sugihara had decided to release Warner Brothers' big summer tentpole movie on May 6th, 2016. The film is Batman vs. Superman, and it's supposed to be the studio's biggest movie of the year, featuring its two biggest superheroes sharing the big screen together for the first time ever. But as Sugihara sits in his office on the studio's sprawling Burbank lot, he's just received some bad news. Another studio is going to release their blockbuster on the exact same day. And it's not just any other studio either, or any other movie. This is a film from DC's arch rival in all things superhero, the Disney-owned Marvel Studios. Over at Marvel, studio head Kevin Feige is relishing this game of chess. He's presided over an unbroken string of hits as Marvel has dominated the box office since the release of Iron Man back in 2008. And does he feel confident with his strategic power play? You bet he does. These are the two biggest names in the superhero business, DC Comics and Marvel, and they are staring each other down again, as they have for more than 50 years, just like a couple of comic book characters themselves. Someone is going to have to give. Someone is going to have to blink. If both movies are released on the same day, this is going to split audiences, and that could spell disaster at the box office for both studios. Sugihara frets over the decision. Social media explodes with DC and Marvel fans duking it out over which movie should yield to the other. Finally, it's Sugihara that blinks. Kevin Feige smiles. His movie, Captain America: Civil War, will hold on to its release date. Batman vs. Superman? They have to find a new date. Kapow. Kapow indeed. It's just another day in the long-running feud between Marvel and DC.
Tools and Weapons is a podcast exploring the promise and the peril of the digital age, hosted by Microsoft's vice chair and president, Brad Smith. His latest guest is Bayer CEO Bill Anderson. Though many of us know Bayer for its pharmaceuticals, they're also focused on crop science with the goal of making sure no one on planet Earth goes hungry. On Tools and Weapons, Brad and Bill talk about how the German company is using artificial intelligence paired with CRISPR technology to increase food production without fertilizers. Their efforts put AI and digital tools in the hands of farmers to get the most out of every acre on a hotter, more crowded planet. It's the latest conversation in a series that invites listeners to pull up a front row seat to some of the most important developments in technology today. You can check out this episode and a whole lot more of Tools and Weapons with Brad Smith wherever you get your podcasts.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
From Wondery, this is Business Wars. I'm David Brown.
It's If you've listened to our past series, you've heard about the outsized personalities that drove rivalries between Netflix and HBO, Nike and Adidas. We'll be exploring other epic battles in coming weeks, like Coke versus Pepsi and Lyft taking on Uber. But for the next six episodes, we're going to take you inside the real and mythical world of the comic industry. Now we begin episode one, Origin Stories. DC Comics and Marvel are the biggest names in the superhero business. They've been landing blows on each other for nearly five decades. A little like the eternal struggle between Batman and the Joker, you might say. But what started as a war for the minds of mostly adolescent, hardcore comic book readers has escalated into a multi-billion dollar epic battle that's being waged in boardrooms, on social media, and in movie theaters, where the seats tremble from the sound of the superheroes blasting one another with their many superpowers. The bottom line is colorful comic book heroes are everywhere, and they are big business. Maybe you were one of the millions who caught the Black Panther movie recently on its way to a record U.S. opening. That's a Marvel film, by the way. Or maybe you've already bought your ticket for the Deadpool sequel. Or maybe you prefer to consume your spandex-wearing heroes on TV, where, like the multiplexes, these characters also dominate. We're talking about The Flash, Supergirl, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., The Defenders, Arrow. The list goes on and on. And believe me, fans pick sides. DC versus Marvel. Comic books aren't just part of mainstream pop culture, they are pop culture. Superheroes have burst out of the damp basements and clicky comic book stores to take over the world. In 2017 alone, movies starring comic book characters accounted for five of the top 10 highest money-making films of the year. That's saying something. But it certainly wasn't always this way. How did Marvel and DC fight their way to the top? And how did comic books go from a niche hobby catering mostly to kids to dominating the pop culture landscape? To understand this evolution, we got to go back to the early 1960s. The space race is well underway as John Glenn becomes the first American to orbit the Earth. Chubby Checker has just launched a dance craze with something called the Twist, and a young, handsome president has just claimed the White House. DC is on top, thanks to this guy.
Superman, faster than a speeding bullet.
Actually, let's go even further back. You see, DC had introduced the American superhero back in 1938 with the publication of the first Superman story. The character was created by a couple of nerdy Cleveland kids named Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. They had tried for four long years to sell the character as a comic strip, but were rejected by pretty much every publisher. Finally, DC bought the character to run in a new magazine it was putting together called Action Comics. The creators were paid all of $130. Superman quickly became the biggest selling thing since, well, you know, the proverbial sliced bread. In fact, he became so popular, he would actually get his own brand of sliced bread.
A million people line New York streets to see the annual Thanksgiving Day parade, with a series of enormous inflated figures representing famous historical and screen personalities.
Sales of his magazine soon climbed to a million copies. Merchandise clogged shelves. A Superman balloon flew in the 1939 Macy's Thanksgiving Day parade. The people who ran DC at the time didn't have much personal interest in comics, but they did have a personal interest in making money, and they could see that Superman was filling the coffers like nothing before. They commissioned more costumed heroes, and in 1939 along came Batman, swinging from rooftops, and soon after Wonder Woman started lassoing bad guys. DC's dominance continued for two more decades. The popularity of superheroes ebbed and flowed, but DC had weathered the downturns in large part because Superman never went out of style. They didn't call him the Man of Steel for nothing. Which brings us back to the 1960s. Superman sells an impressive 810,000 copies per issue, and DC seemingly has it all. The best talent, the most recognizable and merchandisable superhero characters out there. and cushy corporate offices in a midtown Manhattan skyscraper clad in gold, literally. Marvel is around. They're also based in midtown Manhattan. But their operation is a bit more, lean, shall we say. In fact, the publisher is basically one full-time employee. His name is Stan Lee. Perhaps you've heard of him? The legendary Stan Lee would go on to become like the Federico Fellini of comic books, and as synonymous with Marvel as Walt Disney is with the company he founded. You've probably seen him in one of his requisite cameos in today's Marvel movies. There he is, tall and lanky, with a receding hairline, a graying mustache, tinted glasses, and that boyish twinkle in his eye. But in 1960, well, he's not a legend yet. He's just some poor schlub writer and editor toiling away in the low-class funny book business, churning out hundreds of mostly forgettable tales of romance, horror, and the Wild West. Marvel, at this point, isn't really a superhero company. Now, they'd been founded as one back in 1939, like a lot of comic book publishers. They were born to chase the success of Superman. Their first comic book back in 1939 was called Marvel Comics No. 1, and it featured the debut of two superpowered characters. One was the Submariner, a powerful undersea king. And then there was the Human Torch, an android with the ability to burst into flames. Both were moderately popular, but the company's biggest early superhero success was Captain America. He burst onto newsstands in 1941 with a provocative cover showing the star-spangled Avenger socking Hitler in the chops. But after a few years, readers grew tired of all its superheroes and Marvel turned to other genres. In fact, Marvel nearly went out of business in the 1950s when it suddenly lost its distributor, the company responsible for getting its magazines to newsstands for sale. The company's owner was forced to fire nearly everyone. Everyone, that is, except one writer, Stan Lee. Maybe that had something to do with the fact that Lee was related to the owner. After graduating from high school in 1939, Lee was looking for work. His uncle came to him.
"Look, Stan, I think I got a lead for you. Your cousin's husband runs a publishing company over on 42nd Street. Publishing, huh? That sure beats working as an office boy at a pants factory. Comics, maybe. Yeah, I like that idea."
He started as an errand boy, fetching sandwiches and refilling inkwells for the artists. Soon he found himself in charge of the whole place. The editor quit suddenly in 1941, and Lee was made editor by default, at all of 18 years old, by the way. The new gig forced him to be all things for the company. Its operations sometimes achieved, shall we say, comic proportions, like when visitors would come to the office.
"Excuse me, young man, would you know where I could find the editor, Mr. Lee?"
The visitor would be talking to Mr. Lee, though he could be excused for not knowing the kid in the reception area dressed in sneakers and a sweatshirt was not an errand boy, but artist and editor-in-chief, too. Lee responds like he's the errand boy, of course, not the boss.
Just a minute, sir. I'll tell him you're here."
"Marvel Comics, how may I direct your call?"
"It's Stan. Can you please tell the man in the lobby that I've left for the day?"
"Sorry?"
"Just do it, please."
The visitor would then leave, unsure if he'd ever meet the mysterious editor. By 1960, Stan Lee is feeling burnt out. I mean, he can only pen so many formulaic juvenile stories. In fact, he feels like he's wasting his life. Lee dreams of writing the great American novel. That's why he uses a pen name, Stan Lee, on his comic book work. He's saving his real name, Stanley Lieber, for his masterpiece. Maybe someday. Maybe it's time to go write that book, he thinks. Or do anything else, really. I mean, comics are a low-prestige business. They're considered suitable only for small children or mentally deficient adults. Lee is even ashamed to admit to others what he does for a living. So that's it.
He finally resolves that tomorrow, he's going to walk into Marvel's office and quit. After more than 20 years, Stan Lee is going to walk away from comics for good. And then something unexpected happens. The next day, at the office, before he can offer his resignation, Marvel's owner tells him something. And that something will change the course of comic book history and pop culture history forever.
You know, Audible has a brand new collection of exclusive thrillers. Every move is made more exciting by captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances. I just downloaded The Grand Opening by Carl Weber. It's a mystery about a family business in a small southern town, and there are secrets around every turn. You know, when I'm listening, the time just disappears, getting completely immersed in the story and the performances. And as an Audible member, you get to keep one title a month from their entire catalog, including bestsellers and new releases. So come on, listen along. New members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Head on over to audible.com/BW or just text BW to 500-500. That's audible.com/BW or text BW to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. We get support from Acura. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
So, what does Stan Lee hear that day that makes him reconsider quitting? Well, it's something that would get Marvel back on its feet and put it on the path to become the international powerhouse it is today. And the irony is, it goes back to DC. DC's debut of Superman back in 1938 had launched a massive superhero boom, but by about a decade later, the superpowered had fallen out of favor and audiences instead turned to other genres. It's just like certain genres today. One day zombies are hot, the next day you can't give away an undead corpse. But in 1956, DC decided to test the popularity of superheroes again. They released a revamped version of the speedster hero The Flash. And Eureka. It was a surprise hit. So, DC soon followed with other updated characters. A new superhero boom was upon us. DC's most ambitious title, however, comes in 1960. The folks at DC have a brilliant brainstorm that if kids liked one superhero in a book, why not give them more, like seven? So an editor takes many of DC's biggest names, Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, and combines them into one super team.
The Justice League of America, the combined might and power of the Man of Steel and the Cosmic Crusader, the Winged Avenger and the King of the Sea, the Tiny Titan and the Scarlet Streak, all working together for good against evil as the Justice League of America.
The Justice League of America comic is a smash. It makes DC, the richest superhero company, even richer. Now, here's something you need to know about Marvel's founder and owner, talking about Stan Lee's boss. His name is Martin Goodman, and he's a businessman first, a comic book fan, 1,000th. His greatest skill is seeing a trend and capitalizing on it. Goodman once summed up his business strategy like this. If you get a title that catches on and then add a few more, you're in for a nice profit. There we are. So Goodman's always looking for breakout titles that he can copy. That's where DC's Justice League comes in. One day, the Marvel founder is out on the golf course with an executive from rival DC Comics, probably some posh country club on Long Island a couple of hours outside Manhattan. The two are shanking balls, discussing the biz. So, how's everything over at DC?
Pretty great.
We've just introduced this new title that's selling like gangbusters.
Huh? What is it?
It's called the Justice League. It combines most of our current superhero characters into one team. The kids love it. They can't wait to slap down their dimes.
You don't say. Fun story. It's probably bunk, though. Goodman says he never played golf in his life. More likely, Goodman finds out about the Justice League's success by leaning on his industry contacts, or from a spy within the distributor. However he actually found out, Goodman sees dollar signs. He is determined to capitalize on the success of DC's new title, in the same way he tried to draft off Superman back in 1939. He rushes excitedly back to the office and summons Stan, because he's got a job for his editor. But at this moment, Stan Lee has something else on his mind. Ah, Stan, there you are. Hey, come into my office a second. I've got something I want you to work on. Okay, Mr. Goodman, I've been wanting to talk to you as well. Listen, I've been thinking, and I feel...
Yeah, Stan, in a minute. I've just found out that DC has got a new title that's flying off the stand.
Right, but...
Stan, could you come up with a team of superheroes like DC's Justice League? You could use our old heroes like Submariner, Human Torch, maybe Captain America. That'll save you from having to dream up any new characters.
Okay, let me think about it.
Lee leaves the office torn, his head swirling a bit. It's Goodman's lucky day, and ultimately a lucky day for all superhero fans. Remember, Stan Lee had resolved to quit just the day before. But when he witnesses Goodman's enthusiasm for this new title, well, he delays walking away for at least 24 hours. Lee's torn. He's approaching 40 years old, and he can feel his youth slipping away. And with it, the opportunity to work in any other field besides these stupid comic books. What respectable company would ever hire him when all he's got is 20 years of riding this dreck under his belt? Well, that night, Lee pours his heart out to his wife, Joan. Joan is supportive, but then she says something somewhat unexpected.
You know, Stan, if Martin wants you to create a new group of superheroes, this could be a chance for you to do it the way you've always wanted to do. You could dream up plots that have more depth and substance to them, and create characters who have interesting personalities. I'm just saying, people who speak like real people.
Her words change history. Lee decides to give this new superhero group at Marvel at least one shot. And as his wife suggests, he's going to do this comic book his way, by God. Never mind what DC is doing with the Justice League. He burns inside to do a comic book with more depth, more maturity. DC is for kids, Stan thinks. He vows to make his superhero book for an older, smarter, savvier reader. Well, in the next year, 1961, the result of his efforts hits newsstands, and it would turn out to be like nothing comic book readers had ever seen. It would create what we now know as the Marvel Universe. It's a comic called The Fantastic Four, a sci-fi tinged tale about a group of adventurers with a dysfunctional dynamic who accidentally gain incredible powers. The comic will change the way superhero stories are told from that point forward, and it'll also unleash an era of unprecedented creativity that will witness the creation of dozens of new characters, many of whom now have their own movie franchises. And for Marvel's rival, the mighty DC, well, it will turn into a body blow from which they will spend decades recovering.
Hey, Prime members, you can binge every episode of Business Wars ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Business Wars. I'm your host, David Brown. Reed Tucker, author of Slugfest, Inside the Epic 50-Year Battle Between Marvel and DC, wrote this story.
Karen Lowe is our senior producer and editor. Sound design by Bay Area Sound. Our show's executive producer is Marshall Louie, and it was created by Hernan Lopez for Wondery.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.